one amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Members, Madam Chair, the amendment I offered makes certain provisions in this bill consistent with what federal law regarding recalls. Toy recalls, the consequence of extensive ongoing testing and retesting by toy manufacturers, retailers, importers, and others as part of an industry-wide effort to help ensure that products on our toy store shelves are safe. Although it's unlikely that recalls can ever be eliminated, manufacturers continually work hard to achieve that goal. When a recall does take place, this bill prohibits retailers from selling any toy that has been recalled by the federal government or the toy's manufacturer, the wholesaler, distributor, or the importer. Federal law already prohibits this activity. This piece of legislation would make sure that the state complies with the federal law as well. Consumer Product Safety Commission calls most corrective actions recalls, but corrective actions also involve supplemental notices about the proper use of products, replacement parts and instructions, or product repair or fixes when products themselves can be sold subject to such action. This assures a little flexibility of remedies to the benefit of the consumer and avoids technical issues related to use of the term recall. And the reason we had another reason for the amendment is that we had some wordage in there talking about the rescinding of recalls, and that really does not happen. So I would offer Senate File 474 as amended and stand for questions.
Okay. Is there anybody who wishes to testify? I know we have Mr. Hill and Mr. Kavanaugh listed, but I think I learned from Mr. Hill they weren't.
Mr. Kavanaugh is not here today. Mr. Okay. Hill's available if someone has a specific question.
Yeah, if you have a question. I think it doesn't look like you've had anything really. Your amendment really didn't do anything terribly substantive. It's still in consumer protection statute. But you did take out the reference to the order being rescinded.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Yeah. And, Senator Matheson.
Just out of curiosity, if you said it's federal law, why are we doing it?
There was
a reason why we have to do it too.
Mr. Hill can maybe speak to this better than I can, but I believe there's some history that once the federal law was enacted, there was certain people in the toy business that wanted to make sure that we were on board and just wanted kind of some cover language, and that's what this bill does.
Okay.
Any questions from any of the other members? Anybody in the audience wish to testify? Seeing no one. On Senator Scogin's motion that Senate File 474 is amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And the bill is referred, I guess, to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, Senator Scogin.
Senate File, your next one, members and Madam Chair, Senate File 613, and I will offer the A2 amendment. This is going to, we're going to be talking about certificates of insurance today, members, and this amendment will clean up the opinion letter language a little bit and takes out the civil penalties portion that was in the original bill. So it's just cleaning things up for us a little bit here.
Okay.
On lines 2.3, page 2, line 3 through 8 is a part that we're actually taking out, subdivision 6 and 7, and then we're adding the provision there on line 3 of the amendment.
And it's an author's amendment in any case. So
that is correct.
We'll get this bill shaped up for you. Any questions on the A2 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Now, Senator Scogin.
Well, this is a certificate of insurance bill. It takes various regulations and insurance practices relating to certificates of insurance and puts them into a single section in the state's insurance statute. Certificates of insurance are merely written documents that provide proof of insurance to a third party. Most certificates are written on a standardized form developed by the insurance industry. Insurance agents are often asked to make changes to these certificates, and this bill would prohibit that practice. And Dominic Spassetto of the Independent Insurance Agency is here to answer specific questions and respond to any questions that the members might have.
Senator Scogin, is this when you have to show a third party that you have insurance coverage?
Oftentimes somebody will request that, and we have, well, I may be speaking out of turn, but occasionally somebody will change the rules, the regulations, or the intent of the insurance to offer maybe more or less protection than is actually offered in the actual insurance policy.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Scogin. And I would imagine, you know, one of the purposes that this might be directed to get at is a situation where someone's wondering, you know, am I going to be covered if X happens? And they might ask their insurance agent, and the insurance agent might write back to them, giving them some advice. But if the advice doesn't line up with what's actually in the policy, it seems like this is saying that letter doesn't have any effect. It's basically whatever is in the policy that controls. And so I guess what I'm just wondering is, in situations where agents do things that are considered a breach of their responsibility to the person they're insuring, like if they gave them bad advice about what was in their insurance policy, even if it was, you know, just an inadvertent mistake, but still, the person's relying on that advice, we have the ability now for that person to go back against their insurance agent and hold them accountable if they relied on that bad advice, kind of independent of what's in the insurance policy, just based on the duty that they owe to their consumer. And I'm wondering if this would in any way alter that ability to hold your insurance agent accountable if that person gave you incorrect advice.
I suspect Mr. Sposetto may want to respond to that.
Thank
you. Mr. Sposetto, welcome.
Madam Chairman, Dominic Sposetto, I represent the insurance agents of Minnesota. There are a couple parts to answers to your question. First of all, we're not actually dealing with any personal lines insurance here. This is mostly commercial insurance, where we have a contractor requesting another contractor to have proof of insurance so that they can complete a job or work on a particular site. It's very, very common that we get these certificates in between contractors to do that. And so that's what we're trying to address, where one contractor, the general contractor is asking the subcontractor to provide proof of insurance that has different kinds of specifications than are in the underlying policy, which if the agent does, the agent can be in trouble. Now, the overall answer to your question is, in Minnesota, insurance agents are legal representatives of the company. So whatever an insurance agent does, it can bind that company to that action. And what happens if an agent does something that's inappropriate, in this case, then the company would have to pay up, but the company could then go after the agent's errors and omissions coverage for a malpractice action. So what we're really trying to do here, I don't think this dramatically affects the consumer at all. I think it's more of an issue between the agent and the companies that they represent and the certificates that they may put out on behalf of those carriers.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Sposetto, so as to those kinds of contracts, I didn't realize it was just limited, you know, based on where it is, but as to those, how are you altering that relationship?
Mr. Sposetto.
Madam Chair, are you actually about the certificate itself? Or the relationship between the contractors or the carrier? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Sposetto, basically you said you're not really impacting the consumer, that you're impacting the relationship. I thought I heard you say between the agent and the insurance company itself. And I'm just wondering how that relationship is being impacted by the language that's in this bill.
Mr. Sposetto.
Madam Chairman, it's our hope that this particular proposal will serve as an alert to insurance agents that for them to alter a certificate of insurance, a form that they get from their carrier, to alter that is an act that is illegal under statute. So we're trying to stem that particular issue in the bud. It's a very large problem, and we're going after it from a perspective of regulating ourselves instead of trying to regulate the entire industry and how that's set up. So what we're saying is it's illegal for an agent to amend a certificate of coverage that does anything that affirmatively or negatively changes what's in the underlying policy, because a certificate is frankly just a snapshot of proof of insurance that on this day this person had this insurance coverage, and you're attesting to the fact that that coverage is in force. It's being used to try and use what I would call risk creep, where they're making changes in this, either to the coverages, the named insureds, or most often notice of cancellation, where they're requesting a notice of cancellation greater than you even give to the policyholder themselves. So we're trying to fix this problem by putting this in statute as a warning to insurance agents not to do that practice. I don't think it affects anything if an agent does something that's inappropriate and there is a case against the agent and the carrier. I don't think this affects anything in that at all.
Senator Olson, is that?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I don't know. I'd just be concerned. First, you said, I thought you said this doesn't affect agents' policies between consumers and insurance companies. It seems like this affects, this is a broad statement in terms of the policies that it impacts. It says property or casualty insurance issued to any person other than the policyholder must contain, I mean, isn't this a broad provision that impacts all insurance policies?
Madam Chairman, we're only talking about certificates of insurance issued to someone other than the policyholder. The policyholder gets a binder, which is a legal document. They get the actual policy, which generally has a declaration page which specifies all of that. All of that is not affected by this. This is a request from a third party, from, say, Senator Sparks, to make sure that Senator Olson has insurance. And so you would come to me as your agent. I would give you this certificate. You would give it to Senator Sparks to prove that you have insurance and you're covered for whatever risks are under that policy.
And so if I may just, it clearly has to say that it doesn't amend, extend, or alter the coverage. So it the coverage is whatever the policy says it is, I think. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, thank you for that, Mr. Spizzetto. I don't know why it took me a minute to understand what you were saying, but for example, if I'm getting a loan and my bank wants to know that I have homeowner's insurance in order to give me the loan, it would be that kind of situation?
I think, Senator Olson, you'd probably get a binder at that point.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, my wife is a self-employed artist, for example, often would go into a home where a construction project was going on, and they construction company would want to know that she had insurance. So our insurance agent would give them a certificate of insurance, some kind of a document that would prove that she was insuring herself. But they could not, what this says is they cannot add or detract from the actual insurance that she was buying in that certificate.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, then my only other question has to do with the notice provision, and I'm just wondering, when does that come up? Because what this says is that the certificate can't provide for notice that would exceed statutory notice of cancellation. So in other words, I guess it can't provide for a longer period than what's in statute as far as cancellation. Can you just give an example of when that would come up?
Mr. Spizzetto.
Madam Chairman, Senator Olson, current law under commercial insurance requires a 60-day notice of cancellation with the exception of non-payment of premium, and that's a 10- or 15-day notice. Oftentimes, these certificates will ask for a 60- or 90-day notice of cancellation, which cannot actually be done. You can't give someone a notice of cancellation until you notify the actual policyholder that they haven't paid the premium. So in some cases, they're asking for notice greater than that than what law requires us to give to the policyholder. And we want to end that practice.
Any other questions from members? Is there anybody else who'd like to testify on Senate File 613? Okay, then Senator Scogin moves that Senate File 613 as amended be recommended to pass, and this would go to the floor.
Thank you,
any discussion,
Chair.
Members? All those in favor of the Scogin motion say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Domino. A pizza boy.
The motion prevails on an 8-1. That was a joke. That was tongue in cheek. And Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, fellow committee members, I have Senate File 1711.
And you have an author's amendment, I think?
Yes.
I don't know if you have a copy
of it.
It's A1, but
I don't, but...
Lutens will get you a copy of that, a couple copies. Just make sure that that's the author's amendment.
Yes, so I will move the A1 amendment.
As an author's amendment, all those in favor say aye. Aye, opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, members, this bill will improve the motor vehicle dealership franchise laws so that Minnesota dealers have the same protections as dealers in other states. The reforms made in this bill are especially important in the face of looming failures and restructuring of some of the major auto manufacturers, and will provide a little bit of assistance to dealerships that are struggling to keep their lights on. I have with me Alyssa Schlander from the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association, who will walk you through the bill.
Hey, Ms. Schlander, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As Senator Dahl said, my name is Alyssa Schlander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. Members, as you know, this is a very precarious time for our industry. Sales are down drastically. Just 6 years ago, our industry in Minnesota saw sales upwards of 210,000 vehicles in Minnesota. This year, we are expected to crack maybe about 120,000 vehicles. So it is very desperate in our industry right now. The credit crisis is threatening every dealership in this state.
Ms. Schlander, when did you say we were at 210?
6 years ago. In our industry, the dealerships are somewhat unique. We are independent, family-owned businesses. That's a little unlike other industries where there are company-owned franchisees that account for the distribution system. In the world of auto sales, the dealerships make the dealers themselves make substantial investments in their property, their building, their investments in equipment, marketing, and much of that is imposed on dealers by the manufacturers. Manufacturers that require the dealers to invest in inventory levels, working capital requirements, sales and marketing, showroom and facilities, much of that is directed by the manufacturers. And therefore, it's important to us to have a strong state franchise law to sort of make sure that those agreements maintain some fairness. So, you know, as Senator Dahl said, in light of what's going on in the industry right now, we're facing the possible or probable failure of one or more of the major auto manufacturers. Our board wanted to just make sure that Minnesota's franchise law is as strong as some other states around the country. And so the A1 amendment represents a compromise that we have worked out with the automakers and other interested parties. So there is no opposition to the bill as it is amended. I'll just quickly walk through it as to not take up a lot of committee time on the last day of deadlines. First of all, we have inserted here the issue of requiring successor manufacturers to offer existing dealers a franchise on the same or similar terms as their current agreement. What we're looking at here, you know, General Motors has been very public about their intentions to either, to try to sell Saturn or Hummer or Saab or possibly Pontiac. Whether or not that actually happens, it remains to be seen. But if they do, you know, we are trying to make sure that the dealers who have invested in marketing and servicing these vehicles have the first crack at continuing that franchise line make under a new owner. And on the flip side of that, that sort of protects the dealers. A few months ago, General Motors and Chrysler were negotiating a merger. And in that situation, the deal that was on the table was that Chrysler was going to sell all their automotive operations to General Motors, and in exchange, General Motors was going to give up some of its interest in GMAC, the financing arm. If that were to if that deal had come to pass, it didn't ultimately. We all know what happened since then. But if that had come to pass, the dealers, General Motors would have held excessive line makes, and they would have been looking at terminating, several of the Chrysler products, if not the GM products. The dealerships in that situation would have they would no longer have been entitled to the termination assistance under our state franchise law under a new owner. We're just kind of looking to close that loophole there. Secondly, we're adding a few protections for dealers facing a termination by a manufacturer. The last thing that is in the bill and is quite important to the dealers is the issue of site control. What we're trying to do is allow dealers a little bit more flexibility when they're looking to add an additional line make into an existing facility. Our law provides a small bit of protection for dealers right now in that it says that the factory can't terminate your franchise if you bring in an additional line make into your existing facility. What we're trying to do is just make sure that manufacturers have used other remedies to try to force that issue. We're trying to give dealers a little bit more protection about just being able to diversify their offerings in their existing facilities, especially in this economic environment where sales are down so drastically, and there is just so much room for other products in the facilities. So in a nutshell, that's what it does, and be happy to take any questions if there are any.
Ms. Schlander, I see that line make is defined right in Section 1 mm-hmm. of the bill. Is that new terminology? I mean, I've heard of automobile lines, and I've heard of makes of automobiles. I just had never heard of line make. I think it means the same thing.
It kind of does mean the same thing, Madam Chair. What we just found was we started to use the term line make, but we hadn't defined that in this section of law, so it's basically the common understanding of what people.
Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? Are there any questions from members? And you've worked with the industry. There's nobody. We're okay. I'm getting a nod from one of the representatives of one of the manufacturers that the bill is fine. Okay. Then, Senator Dahl moves that Senate File 1711, as amended, be recommended to pass. And this will obviously go to the floor.
So moved.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you.
And I noted that we took recreational vehicles out of the bill.
Just that one section.
Or Madam, make sure they weren't included. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and I am from Forest City, Iowa, home of Winnebago Industries,
yes.
And actually worked there for 2 years, drove a forklift. But I made sure I asked all the right questions about recreational vehicles.
And I drove through that city all the time on my way to and from school.
I remember you driving by.
Senator Dahl, trust me, you don't. You do not.
All right.
It's all 45, 46 years ago, actually. 45, yeah. See, I was right.
I was too.
So, Senate File 1910.
Yes, Senate File 1910 is a technical bill from the Department of Commerce dealing with licensing changes, and it does include a variety of technical clarifying provisions regarding licenses that are regulated by the department. So I have with me Peter Bratch from the Commerce Department who will talk to you about what this bill hopes to do.
And I'll bet I see something in here that has Senator Vanderveer's attention. I just happened to see appraiser licenses in here.
Madam Chair, I do have an author's amendment.
Okay, yes.
I believe that's the A1.
Just a moment here. I may. An A1 author's amendment on, excuse me, on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Okay, now you have the bill. I'm so sorry.
I'll turn it over to Mr. Bratch.
Madam Chair, members,
Bratch,
thank
welcome.
You. Thank you, Senator Dahl. I am Peter Bratch, Licensing Director for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Senate File 1910 is the department's licensing and license education bill. It concerns insurance, real estate, and real estate appraiser licenses. And our three main goals with this bill are to update our laws to match model language recommended by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC, streamline our process for approving continuing education courses, and adopt recommendations made by the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee, or ASC. And at this time, I'd like to give you just a very brief high-level overview of the sections of the bill. The first 24 sections are related to license education material to be added to the Commerce General Powers Statute. Most of this material is being transferred from rule, and the rule is being repealed by this bill. Sections 25 through 31 amend the Insurance Producers Statute, primarily by adopting provisions of the NAIC Producer Licensing Model Act. Sections 32 through 54 amend the Insurance Adjusters Statute by adopting the NAIC Independent Adjuster Licensing Guideline and Public Adjuster Licensing Model Act. Section 56 is real estate pre-license course curriculum information transferred from rule to the Real Estate Brokers and Salespersons Statute. Section 57 contains amendments to that same statute that result from streamlining the continuing education course review process. Finally, sections 58 through 73 amend the Real Estate Appraisers Statute, primarily by transferring material from rule, which is also being repealed by this statute. Some of that new material reflects changes requested by the ASC. We have discussed this bill with licensees, education providers, and other interested parties, and we believe that we have addressed their concerns about policy. And to the extent that any concerns may remain about implementation, we are certainly open to continuing discussions on those. Thank you very much.
Okay, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the witness, I see that some of it is effective in August of this year, and then some of it a year later.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Bratch.
Madam Chair, Senator Scogin, I'm glad you brought that up. We have offered a new effective date with the author's amendment because that was such a problem.
Thank you.
Mr. Bratch, I had a very interesting meeting with Senator Vandeveer and the commissioner and some others from the department concerning appraisers and licensing and the issue that we have these magnificent real estate programs at St. Cloud State and at St. Thomas, and that people aren't able to qualify for the educational requirements. Can you just give me some progress? I should have asked Senator Vandeveer, I suppose. Maybe he's heard something. But
you have not.
I was just wondering if you've had conversations there about that.
Madam Chair, indeed we have. Thank you for mentioning that. And again, I will reiterate, those are magnificent programs at the University of St. Thomas and St. Cloud State. And yes, we're working with Dr. Mooney from St. Cloud State and Drs. Hamilton and Muscle from St. Thomas.
Okay. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And how close are we?
Mr. Bratch.
I would say that one of the institutions is closer than the other, so we're working with the one that's fallen a little bit behind to help get what we need to satisfy the feds on this.
But Mr. Bratch, we think we can satisfy the feds.
Yes, indeed.
I think that was an issue. Is it HUD?
Madam Chair, essentially it's the appraisal subcommittee.
Okay. So, but all this is doing is dealing with what's apparently rule now, and you're codifying it.
Madam Chair, yes.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to Senate File 1910. Are there any discussion on the part of members? Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a separate question. You're increasing fees in this bill?
Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Bratch.
Madam Chair, Senator Vandeveer, no. No fee increases.
Thank you.
Okay. And there's no penalties included in here, Mr. Bratch?
Madam Chair, members, if there is any language like that, it's already existent in statute or rule.
So, then on Senator Dahl's motion that Senate File 1910 as amended, right, be recommended to pass and go to the floor. For the discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Senator Dahl, we got your bills done. Finally, I apologize to everyone that we had this delay of the two Scogin bills and the two Dahl bills, but I appreciate their patience with us. And Then I want to, members, we announced earlier today that we might have to meet at 7 o'clock. Staff thought that we wouldn't finish before tomorrow on the floor, so or at least sometime later this afternoon. So they scheduled something for 7 o'clock tonight. That meeting is canceled if the members will indulge me to look at a bill that's actually a piece of a bill we already had lengthy discussion of and passed out of this committee. This bill has a companion in the House exactly as you see it, and you know that members know that I'm interested in some some reform of the no-fault system. The only reform in this bill before you is the same, one of the same reforms I had in the legislation earlier before the committee, and actually it's come out of the Judiciary Committee as well, and that this has to do with increasing the amount of funeral and burial expenses on no-fault. That's in the other bill we passed. I didn't think you would find it controversial, and I'm working with the House Chair to see if we can reach some, I don't know if the word's compromise, but some kind of agreement on some of the reforms we should do. And I think this is one that nobody questioned when we had the meeting. It's probably overdue because right now, as you can see in the language, that amount is $2,000. This is all under, this is under no fault. So, I shouldn't really preside over my own bill, should I? I apologize. So I'd appreciate it if the committee would indulge me and pass this bill to the floor. This doesn't have to go to Judiciary. This is strictly an increase in a benefit, and I'm going to continue to work, and I won't do anything without talking to each member of the committee about what, you know, where we land with any kind of no-fault reform. But this is probably the one vehicle that the other chair and I share. Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, hey. That's Junior's chair.
Let the record show the chair has been reprimanded. I'm sorry.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Schein. I'm just wondering, did something else happen to the other bill? I mean, why is it necessary to be doing this when we already passed this once?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I don't think it's necessary. I think that but the thing is that the other bill does not have Chair Atkins as the author. And so he wants to, I think, control what the House, you know, might do on the issue. And so I'm just being cooperative and amenable and open. So, yeah, it's nothing really sinister, I don't think. It's just trying to find another vehicle maybe for some reform that I think we all agreed we need some. And we certainly all agreed, I think, that we need this one. So, Mr. Chair, I'd move that Senate File 1742 be recommended to pass, please.
Further discussion? On Senator Scheid's motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No. No.
Wait. Motion prevails.
Division.
You guys are great. Do you want to adjourn the meeting? We are not meeting tonight at 7.
So you can adjourn.
Go ahead.
The meeting's adjourned.
You take